Welcome to the Round 6 Podcast, a weekly roundtable discussion featuring a variety of automotive subjects, interviews, special guests, and stories, hosted by the Round 6 Gearheads, Brian Stupski, Brad King, Alex Welsh, and Eric Hibbs. On Episode 5, we are excited to welcome Public Relations Manager, Social Media Strategist, and Autocross Sensation, Susie Bowder. Welcome to the Round 6 Podcast. I'm Brian.
I'm Brad.
I'm Alex.
I'm Eric.
And with us tonight, we have a very special guest. While often and quite mistakenly considered to be a mostly male-dominated sport and hobby, you'd really have to work at it to ignore the marks left by some well-known female racers, those in drag racing like Shirley Muldowney, Ashley Force, even like 11-time kart and 5-time Indy Racing League champion Lynn St. James, even going as far back as like pioneers like Janet Guthrie. I was the first woman to qualify for a race in both Indianapolis and the Daytona 500. And then, of course, you got legendary people like Dorothy Levitt, who was blazing, you know, speed and distance records in the early 1900s. Automobile racing has a rich history of involvement by the fairer sex. And we're stoked tonight to have with us Susie Bowder, the Donna Reed of autocross. Yeah, I got nothing.
Sorry,
after that. That
just
like every ounce of me.
Nice intro. That was great.
Wow.
Yeah. You did some homework.
I've been saving that in the back of my head all day. I figured that's one of the ones I want played when I get my Emmy.
There you go.
Or my potty award, if they have one of those. That'd be a horrible name for it.
Potty.
The golden potty.
I like they make movies. Never mind.
Oh no, that's over in Germany.
Well, you know, they could just, you know, the first one would just be number one, and the second annual would be.
This went sideways way too fast.
Yeah. Speaking of going sideways, how are you, Susie?
I'm great. I'm very happy to be here with you all.
Well, thank you.
We're honored to have you.
Great to have you here.
We've already had a great conversation. Well, we've had everything in this so far. We've had Eastern European women tying their body hair to make sports bras. We've had, this is all beforehand. You didn't miss anything. You just tuned in.
Yeah.
We had Hollywood Squares.
Hollywood Squares.
Real estate. We discovered that if Brad squeezes his pectorals together, it makes wonderful cleavage.
That's a matter of opinion.
And earlier, if this was like an episode of Top Gear, it would have been like, on tonight's episode, Eric eats a sandwich.
Another sandwich.
I just want more tacos.
Yeah. We need to.
Speaking of which, I was in Vegas last night. Yes, I stopped and ate. I think, what do we have? I think I ate 14 tacos at
14.
That's a light night for you. That's good.
Well, you know, the good thing is I could still taste it this morning when I woke up.
So, ew.
Sorry, Susie. This kind of went sideways here. Sorry.
It always does. Just usually not this quickly.
I'm not surprised.
Back on target. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Susie.
Oh my gosh. I feel like everybody knows everything about me since SEMA.
kind of the talk of SEMA, honestly.
Yeah.
Was I? I mean, yeah. I know that I had a pretty crowded booth, but I can't help but think that it was more about the car than it was about me. And I hope it was anyway.
You had a car there?
I know, right?
Well, okay. It started with the car, and then once they started to talk to you, and it became you. I mean, I'm being really serious about that. I mean, the car drew us to the booth. You drew us to who you were, and we were very, very impressed by that.
Well, thank you.
Talking about you.
Heck, we're talking to you now. Look how that worked out.
Right, isn't that crazy? Well, you know, you had a camera and you had notepads and you had official looking shirts, and I was at
CES. I told you that would work.
Works every time.
We're actually solar salesmen.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my gosh. So yeah. So well, I guess to tell you about me, what was to say that we all met at SEMA when you guys came by the Spectre booth to see my 63 Rambler wagon. And I guess just maybe being of a similar age group, we found that we knew a lot of the same people. And I don't know that I laughed so hard with anybody else in the booth. That was good times.
We did have a good time. It was great to sit there and talk to you. So for our listeners, I've got a segue into this, if that's okay.
Yeah.
We saw this really bitchin' Rambler wagon. Okay, and you know, and that doesn't really roll off the tongue, but but it was so cool. And we're walking down the aisle and we see this thing and we're just like, that's just bitching. Look, it's got an LS. Look, are those like 325 front tires? And you know, and so we look at it and we start noticing all the details, and then you come over and start talking to us and telling us about the car. And so for our listeners, you've got to know she knows every detail about this car because she built it with her husband. You did all the upholstery. You did all the wiring.
I did.
Yeah. And I mean, and it's done really well. It's a cool car and it's a race car. And Susie knows how to drive it and fix it.
I do. Well, presumably I know how to drive it. Unfortunately, I haven't driven it yet. I drove it in the SEMA parade. I got it onto the trailer after SEMA, and it's pretty much been on a jack since then. We've had to finish up a few things, you know, how that goes, right? People love, you get stuff that maybe needed some more attention that
absolutely
in your Russia SEMA build. And I was offered the opportunity to race in the Optima thing after SEMA, but I didn't do it. The transmission was acting up a little bit. I still don't have reverse, so that's getting pulled out this weekend and it's going to TCI next week. But I presumably it drives well. On paper it should be. it's pretty amazing on paper. So, and driving in the SEMA parade, I gotta tell you, have you guys ever ridden in a car in the SEMA parade?
No.
Oh my gosh! If I could have taken a dozen people with me, I would have. That was the one thing that I looked forward to all week. I was fortunate enough to do it once before our Camaro got invited to race with Optima. So we hauled it out there for that. And when you pull out of the convention center in the SEMA parade, it's the first time that the public gets to see, well, the first time the public gets to see all the cars that are inside. And those are some amazing people. They are yelling and screaming and saying great things about your car. And it's just this rush. I mean, a total rush. There's a DJ out there and there's some guy announcing. And of course, you know, I come around, he's like, whoa, not sure what that is. Exactly. I don't really ever want to build a SEMA car again. So that might be beyond my
those
capacity.
Are famous last words. Everybody yeah. says that though.
Well, I didn't set out to build a SEMA car. So there's that.
So well, that's probably why it turned out so bitchin'. You built it for you, not for the masses.
No, I did not build it for anybody else but me. I mean, it's certainly a lot prettier than it probably, I mean, truth be told, I may not have painted it, I don't know, ever, or at least not for a year or so. But, you know, SEMA.
Yeah.
You gotta button it up and make it look decent. And I realized when I saw the pictures, we never put the right steering wheel on it. It had a crappy old garbage steering wheel on it for the whole show. Never noticed.
Whoa. So what happens when you're super busy, right?
Yeah. Yeah, when you don't sleep for like 72 hours
yeah.
before the show. because you're just trying to pump and get it done. We should have been done. I don't know, famous last words, but we got everything put, you know, kind of together, and the engine wouldn't fire.
Oh no.
So, yeah, that was
now, who wired that car?
I know, right? Well, I don't know if I should admit this out loud. The engine had been in storage for a couple of years while we were building the car, and the heads got put on and everything, and the masking tape was still over the intake port.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Well, at least nothing got into the cylinder.
Right. They were immaculate.
Well, you got to look at the bright side of it.
I got to take a rapid fire trip from Escondido to the Inland Empire to go pick up a backup motor. Oh. Yeah. At like 4 o'clock in the morning. Jeez. But, wow. You know, and as it was, I got to put my motor in it and it fired up right away once the masking tape was gone.
Well, those things happen. I mean, they happen. I mean,
oh, yeah. We'd replaced everything. Yeah.
You're not the first person I've heard that happen to. Also, it's one of those you get busy and you're not paying attention and it, well, yeah, lack of sleep. There you go.
Yeah. Or you've got a build you've been working on for a couple of months and you get to a certain point and you stop and you start working on something else. Well, you got to remember, where were we at when we stopped on this last thing that we were doing?
Yeah.
And things happen. Hey, it's not uncommon.
Yeah. So there was a bunch of labor that wasn't completely unnecessary and a bunch of sensors and MSD boxes and, you know, whatever. It's all good now. She sounds great. She sounds awesome. She looks good.
But you don't need reverse autocross.
No, so I don't.
Just go turn it up.
But you'd be really surprised at how often you do need reverse.
Just don't spin out.
Yeah, I just meant in general, you know.
Nah, you get back to the pits, just leave a wide, you know, wide berth for yourself to turn around.
Just go all the way around the fairgrounds again as you're coming back into the pits. It's parade lap.
Yeah. Have you ever been to the pits at a Good Guys event?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'll give you an idea how much space you have.
Yeah. It's
the 300 point turn.
And the traffic in there is like being at Costco on like a Sunday afternoon.
That's the main problem. It's the amount of people.
It's unreal.
But you know, there's something about Good Guys. I think it's they've been doing the autocross long enough that there's a huge fan base. So you get a lot of spectators. And, you know, you get your usual car show monkeys, right? You know, oh, my dad had a Mustang just like that. Yeah, sorry, it's a Camaro. But that's cool.
Well, he didn't tell you how messed up his dad's Mustang was.
Yeah, exactly. It was just like your Camaro. But the they follow you, you know, they remember you from the year before, they cheer. It's a really awesome interactive experience. Now you can go to Good Guys, and especially now, because now they're going to take cars up to 87, I think it is.
Right.
And you know, nowadays, if you go to a busy event like Columbus or even Nashville, you may get 6 runs in 3 days.
Oh, wow.
Which is kind of nightmarish for an autocrosser, because that's, you know, we do it because it's quick, right? So you get your 42 seconds, 45 seconds of fun 6 times. And it only took you 7 hours to get there.
Yeah.
I was going to say, when you hope the car's right, sounds like when a good night
trailer.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's an experience, right? You fight the crowds getting into the pits. You're trying to park your car and there's some woman with a stroller not paying any attention whatsoever. And her kid's going to get run over. But, it's a fun event for autocross. I don't know. It must be the people.
You know, I had a chance to run my dad's 32 Roadster in the autocross at Del Mar, oh, geez, 7 or 8 years ago. And it was the most damn fun I'd ever had.
Seriously, and right?
It was stupid fun. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm in a 32 Roadster with a mild small block and, you know, 390 gears. And all it wants to do is boil the tires. And
yeah.
you know, I made about three turns. I'm like, okay, screw it. I'm going to put on a show.
Yeah. To go around a circle.
I was like, I'm not going fast through this, so I might as well have fun.
That, you know, that was back in, when I was in California. I bet we were there together.
Yeah, we probably were.
Yeah, that's funny. The good old days at Del Mar. Del Mar's a fun. That used to be my favorite one. We'd have
We love Del Mar.
Yeah, we would get the guy who runs the campground. We'd get him to put us over in the horse stables where the overflow was. And we just line up motorhomes, and we had hookups and everything. And nice. It was just a big party back there.
How fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Good old Del Mar. That's where we had Camp Autocross. We did Camp Autocross at Del Mar and at Pleasanton. Now out here, now that I live out east, we do Camp Autocross usually at Beach Bend. That's the better place to do it. And we do what they call a low country boil. I don't know if you guys.
Right on.
It's like a big pot of sausage and shrimp and corn and potatoes. And it's got all this spices in it. And then you just pour it out on newspapers on a table and everybody sits around with cold beer and eats with their hands.
All right.
You know, that sandwich didn't cut it for me. I think I need to come hang out at Camp Autocross 2.0.
Yeah.
I had a friend of mine just school me on low country boil. So like I got the whole history, you know, about the low country versus the high country. And that's really cool to hear it mentioned again. So that's kind of funny.
Oh yeah. Funny.
So when cooking tips, is it really friendly or competitive competition when you guys are out running? Is it like, you know, guys don't speak much to each other, or is it just a bunch of friends out there having fun?
No, it's a bunch of friends having fun.
Well, that's good.
I mean, you know, people love to say, so how much money do you win? Yeah.
Well, speaking of that, what is your biggest expense? Would it be tires?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd have to say tires.
Well, how long will a set of tires last a couple of events, or you pretty much kill them per event?
If you're doing good guys, they can go pretty far. We can get as much, well, up to this point, we've been two drivers, one car, and we could get the better part of a season if we're just running good guys and maybe good guys in LS Fest. Mm-hmm. But if we start running, when we run NSRA, the Street Kana, that gets a little tricky because they do their stuff on pavement that is just dreadful for tires. It just eats them up. And you know, the primary tire of choice is a very, very sticky 200 treadwear tire from BF Goodrich. But it's kind of cool this year for the Street Kana, you actually have a chance to win money. Between the Street Kana and the Autocross guys, their own hosted events, they got BFG to sponsor purse, and the majority of the purse is going to go to a class that runs the BFG Sport Comp 2 AS tire. And if you've got a hot rod, that's a pretty popular hot rod tire because it's a really nice street tire. It's about a it's labeled a 320, 350, yeah, somewhere in there, treadwear. But it's a nice tire. And for me to say that is pretty rare because I ran the old BFG Comp 2s once and swore that I'd never buy another BFG tire. So
are you a tire snob? I am a tire snob.
Yeah, I kind of am. I mean, when you spend that much money, now granted that instance of running those tires, I think Rodney had won them at Good Guys. They used to give you a set if you won. And they were just bad. They were just really, really bad. I went out. I had been at school the week before, so I went with all kinds of, trying to say it politically correct, all kinds of courage. And I went out and I basically wiped out the whole finish line. And there were chunks of tires coming in the passenger window and hitting me in the face. It was just not a good idea. So
that's so cool.
We
So
with the year change that Good Guys is going to implement now, do you think that's going to be an issue with you guys in your 68 Camaro running an autocross with some of these later model cars? Do you think they'll split the class up?
I don't know. I should read it more closely, but it's my understanding that it's going to be, they're going to do everything in a runoff. So, I would imagine they're going to split.
Yeah. Because I know you guys have got your car where it works really, really, really well. I'm just kind of curious if somebody rolls up in a Corvette with a lot of work done to it, how would you stand, how would you stack up then? I'm just kind of curious.
Well, on Good Guys courses, we can't come anywhere near a Corvette.
Yeah. Because they're a longer course or.
Now the Rambler may do better against the Corvettes than the Camaro, primarily because the tightness of those courses at Good Guys, it's really in your favor to have independent rear suspension.
Oh, okay.
The stick axle is great on the sweepers. You can carry, you tend to be able to carry more speed in the sweeper, but for those short, tight turns with the independent rear suspension, you're starting on the gas basically as you hit that apex or maybe even right before.
Mm-hmm.
So that you get the rear end of the car to come around and you can give the car, you can accelerate sooner and faster in a turn than you can with the stick axle. So that's why the Corvettes tend to do really well, because they're a short wheelbase with that independent rear suspension.
It's digging that inside tire.
You don't have to work to compress that rear shock down to get that thing to plant on the inside. That's nice.
Yeah, depending on what kind of shocks you're running. Now, my shocks, that's not my issue. We run an automated shock management system. So we're kind of
look at you all fancy pants. Like, I'm just
sitting down. It's so freaking fancy.
I heard they outlawed those last week.
Right. It's so rock star that, I don't even, it's so not deserved, but whatever. It's really
in my low budget world. It's like, it's coil over. Yeah. I chose coils over nothing. So,
the Gabriel hijacker air shock.
You see these guys, especially at like Good Guys and at autocross in general, these pro touring guys, and they get all, fired up. They built their Camaro or their, even Corvette, and I got to have the, 22 adjustable coilovers.
Yeah. The Penske shocks. Yeah. The ones that cost about $4,000 a piece.
Right. And they have no idea how to adjust them.
Yeah. Just put them in the middle.
It's a bug.
Put them at the number 11 setting. That should be fine. Right.
I've seen people that took them out of the box and put them on the car, and they still had stoppers on them.
No.
I mean,
Had the zip tie running from eyelet to eyelet.
Man, this car rides like shit, but it handles really well.
Yeah. Oh, and then you'll see them on Monday, and they'll just, be flaming the company that makes the shocks, and then they'll show a picture, and you look at it, it's like, well, dude, you're running full compression. Yeah, it's not gonna ride well. But so then you get these fancy automated shocks, and I can still adjust them. Mm-hmm. But you're setting parameters essentially so that when the car, you're adjusting for limits, you want limitation. So you only want the car to compress so far or God, the word just went right out of my brain. Anyway. It's a different ball game, and it quite honestly, it wouldn't surprise me if they do outlaw. For now, they're okay.
Well, because they're filled with liquid mercury, probably, and you don't want to spill.
I'm putting that in the show notes. Liquid mercury filled shocks.
And homemade, gas pressurized with hydrazine. Yeah.
And crack cocaine.
That's why they're so expensive.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Unobtainium.
Unobtainium, that's my famous word.
So
absolute obtainium.
Now that we obviously you've given us, you know, the technical side, you've been around here. So, you know, doing a little bit of digging on you, we come to find that you were the only girl in your high school auto shop class.
I was the first year I went in, but you know, the story's a little bit, broader than that. I
get it. Oh, sorry.
I was going to go there, dude.
Yeah, sorry. I got kicked out of home ec.
Wait.
So, what do you have to do to get kicked out of home ec?
Susie Homemaker gets booted out of home ec.
I didn't want to make what the sewing teacher wanted us to make. And she knew I knew how to sew. And so I said, well, that's, you know, that's fine. Everybody else can make the, you know, pillow or whatever it was.
Did you make a Nomex fire suit?
Yeah. No, I mean, I was going to make my prom dress.
Out of a Nomex fire suit. That would have been awesome.
That would have been really awesome.
It's a little itchy, but really
out awesome. Of a moving blanket.
Yeah. So I went to auto shop. I mean, I went to wood shop because I thought that'd be really cool. But I was allergic. I had a lot of allergies as a kid. And I was allergic to some kind of the wood shavings. So I had to leave wood shop in a, you know, wheezing state of patheticness. And so next was auto shop, which was fine with me. I had wanted to take auto shop, but, you know, I was of a generation that still was, you know, reeling in the women's lib moment movement, I guess. And I thought it probably wasn't appropriate. I don't know what I thought, but I went. And the first year of auto shop, I was the only girl in the class. By the second year, by my senior year, though, there was probably maybe two or three of us.
Oh, wow.
So you see, yeah. Drug some along with you.
Something like some. That. Or they figured, they may have figured that it was an easy class because if something happens, you know, the guys always help you out.
That's why both of my older daughters took welding.
Oh, that was awesome.
And my good friend was the teacher, and he pulled me aside one day. He's like, you know, these two girls don't do squat. Oh. I'm like, oh, really? He says, yeah. He says, their grades are good because the boys are doing all the projects for them. I'm like, fail them.
Oh, yeah. Did you kick their butts so that they'd actually learn how to weld?
Oh, yeah. Well, I kicked their butts, but it didn't help.
If they had welding, I'd have taken welding. I love welding.
You do.
But as a person who sews, it's just sewing metal, right? So I use the same logic.
Well, the way I do it, it's more like latch hooking metal. That's.
Oh, okay. Well,
Brian, you cannot use bubble gum to sew a dress.
Sure you can.
Bubble gum and boogers.
I'll wear it for you next week, and it's going to be awesome. Dude.
Oh, you do know Brian.
Well, I didn't think I liked welding for a long time because I really don't like grinding.
Well, then you're not a good welder.
I'm a grinder.
You've seen my welding, then. This is awesome.
Well, I've definitely seen mine. But it did get a little better on the Rambler, but that was part of the deal, that if we were going to build the car, I had to have my hands on everything. And I had to know what I was, you know, what I was doing and why.
Well, and you clearly do. You probably built more of your car than I've built of any of my cars.
Oh, I doubt that.
Well, tell us a little bit about how you found the Rambler, and you know what entered your brain to make it want to become what it is today.
It was always going to be an autocross car. There was never a question in my mind. I thought I wanted a Falcon. I was 80%+ sure that I wanted a wagon. I just thought that was a cool thing to take on the autocross. And I was kind of sick and tired of trying to smash a toolbox and a couple of chairs into the trunk of the Camaro. And I thought, you know, a little wagon would be awesome. So I started looking at Falcons because we had a Falcon when I was a kid. We had a couple of Falcons. And, wagons got really hot. they still are. And then Falcon Wagons, the bubbly, you know, early 60s, like my Rambler, got really hot. And I was in California, so it was worse. You know, guys wanted $5,000-$6,000 for one that had all the windows shot out of it. And if you think about how many windows are in a wagon, that's kind of a pointless endeavor. So I just started looking around at other short wheelbase wagons. And I thought I was pretty close to driving up to Portland. A guy had a Corvair wagon that I thought we could make it work. But thankfully, my son has some mechanical abilities and lives up in Portland. He went and looked at it, and he said, "Mom, they poured the paint on it." He said, "They literally," he said, "I don't know if that paint is a half an inch thick or 3 inches. It's just poured on, and it's dripping, and it just looks horrible." And he said, "Who knows what that's covering up?" And then the guy wouldn't let him drive it. So long story short, I went back to the grindstone and started looking, and I found it on Craigslist. A guy had it. He lived in a trailer park, and they had a storage yard at the trailer park, and he had it parked underneath a cab over camper with a blue tarp over it. And he was the second owner, and he told me lots of stories and gave me a bunch of 8-track tapes to put into the tape player.
Awesome. Some Barry White or something.
He gave me my choice. So there was some. I didn't have any Barry White, but there's some AC/DC.
I was just gonna say, I'll bet you grabbed some AC/DC.
Yeah,
some Super Tramp.
Billy Squire.
Shut up, Super Tramp. Breakfast in America. That's like
hell yeah.
One of the albums that I've owned in every format.
Yep. I cannot.
Great album.
I can't hear any song off of that album without playing the entire, like, the whole playlist from that album in my head and hearing that ka-chunk when it would change tracks on those things.
That's funny. I would probably be the case with Back in Black, AC/DC, and Cheap Trick, Arvita Sane.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
I played a lot. Yeah. Yeah. So I still have the suitcase of 8-tracks, but I did pull that stereo out and put the original back in.
That's too cool.
Mostly because I thought I was going to Optimon and I wanted the style points for D&E.
If you could do this, how great would it be to figure out which one performs better? And this would be a great blog post. Swap the two radios in and out. Find out, you know, which one works better. If, like, you know, if it's better to listen to, like, MP3s while on the autocross, or if an 8-track performs better under high, you know, high G load. I'd be...
The old vinyl record's definitely out.
Reel to reel.
Yeah, that would be interesting. I wonder if 8-track, though, with the Gs, because I remember the 8-track that I had in... What did I have an 8-track in? Oh, my Blazer, my K5 Blazer. That if you hit a big bump, you know, it just jiggled a little and it just messed it up.
Abby, if I hit a big bump, I jiggle a little too.
Yeah, well, that's a given for me. But
14 tacos, that'll do that to you.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm a growing boy.
I'm not touching that.
please,
because I don't think anybody's approached that yet, and you might be able to get some sponsorship from like Crutchfield. Just say, "Hey, we're doing this whole stereo test. I'm going to need a Sony Discman with the travel kit."
Only if I can use the pigtail cord to put the cassette into the cassette deck to play the Discman through the car speakers.
Oh, right. Yeah, the little cassette adapter.
Uh-huh. Oh, how awesome. Yeah. I wonder...
And in an FM modulator.
Yeah.
Yes. For your 6-disc changer that you have in the trunk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
God, you're taking me all back to my mini truck days.
Feels like last week, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Rodney had a mini truck. I didn't have one. I had the Blazer. big, lifted, you know.
So giant. you never wore high top sneakers and hammer pants.
I wore my high top LA Gear.
Ooh.
Oh. With the socks that matched my scrunchie.
Wow. See, now here's the best part, because we're all about the same age, so this works out well, except for Brad. Brad doesn't remember when the young whippersnappers would dress wearing LA Gears.
Yeah, he's still stuck in the bell bottoms.
Hey, Brad, what were they called in your day? Because LA wasn't incorporated as a city yet, so.
Back around Prohibition, I think, wasn't it?
They were Pia Flyers.
Ooh.
Pia Flyers, yeah.
Who was it that made the comment, the Z Cavaricci comment? Oh, that was Alex, wasn't it?
Probably me.
Oh, my hell.
Bringing them back.
Really?
They're bringing back an anniversary pair for some big design show or something. I just read about it, like, a month ago.
$1,500 a pair.
They are. They're some big design houses bringing back Z Cavaricci, one particular pair.
I will have you know, I have never paid more than $80 for a pair of Z Cavs.
But were they acid washed?
No. No, mine were always pressed and pleated. I hear Brian sigh.
That's a Brian sigh.
Ah.
Sorry about that, guys. That was weird. I'm like, just quit. That's very unprofessional of me.
No, no. Did you figure out what it was, or just quit?
No, it's never happened before. And these are good mics, as you know. That's so good. Yeah. Just all of a sudden, the red light went out, and that was the end of it.
What the heck?
Well, that's weird.
I apologize. If you could hear me cursing when it happened, I do apologize.
We heard nothing.
If you didn't, I'll do it again. You ready? Here it comes.
Maybe you should try brushing your teeth. Yeah, forget it.
And it doesn't have batteries or anything.
No. The one I thought was a microphone that took batteries, that was a whole different problem. That just buzzed a lot.
It chipped a tooth talking into it. It wasn't a bad deal.
That's going to require some editing. All right.
I screamed like crazy into that thing.
I thought you said it was a back massager, Brian.
That's right.
That's what I call it.
It's a personal back massager. Right.
Yes, it's homeopathic. And stuff.
Yes.
So I want to know what you guys, what is your favorite car you've ever owned?
Wow.
Good question.
Assuming you all have probably owned a few.
My pickup that I have right now, I got a 49 Chevy pickup truck that's, I have a lot of fun driving.
That's a badass truck.
I like that truck.
It makes me smile every time I get in it. So that would be, my favorite. I'd say.
Mine would probably be my Model A, but I think this 27 I'm building for my wife is probably going to be my favorite pretty soon. If I ever can tear myself away to work on and finish the stupid thing.
Get somebody to put it in SEMA. That'll do it.
Hey.
No, I want to finish it. I don't want it to look finished. I want to finish it.
Well, that's mean.
Wow, that was cold.
That's mean.
Well, you're one of the guys now, so you know I can't let things like that slide. You know
exactly. Okay.
But I'll tell you, I did bring the car home because I was building a buddy shop. I brought it home before SEMA, and I haven't touched it.
Oh dear.
I know my wife's just. I don't even think she even she's just like probably tired of asking me about it. So, it's whatever.
Well, that's how I got around it. Someone said, well, do you think you want to put it in SEMA? And I said, no. Oh, yeah, I do. Uh-huh. I do. Because then it's leave the garage.
I've never owned a car.
Really?
No.
What's your favorite Uber car you've ever been in then?
Yeah.
Prius.
No, it's
aren't they all Priuses?
Yes, the pink one, the pink Prius has been my favorite. No, I of all the cool, fun stuff I've owned, especially the older stuff, I gotta say my favorite car thus far has been the current one. I love that little car. I got a Challenger RT, and yeah, it's just a 5.7 car, you know, lowly 5.7. But that thing is so much fun.
Yeah.
And I keep throwing tiny little quirks and stuff at it, and it's got a ton of potential. And that thing will bake the tires off the rims like it's nobody's business.
And it doesn't feel like a pig?
It doesn't. No, it's been fun. I mean,
you really need to put that thing on a diet.
It is a heavy, heavy car. I'll give it that. I mean, that's sucker. Yeah. But it doesn't feel that way. It's pretty nimble for what it is. It's, how do you put this? It would be the equivalent of like...
It beats every Prius he's ever raced. So
yeah.
Almost. That one was a badass, dude.
You can't really knock the Prius because those hybrid cars have so much torque.
Yep. Yeah.
I'm still going to knock them.
Yeah. All right.
So, hey, Alex, what's your favorite car?
Yeah.
It's kind of a toss-up between my 69 Camaro and my old Riviera that I had. The Riviera, I liked it because it was 100% stock. I bought it from the original owner. It had never been modified at any point, and it was just a fun, cool car. It was not a car you wanted to drive really fast, but just for cruising around, it was a lot of fun.
What year was it?
67.
Oh, bitching.
Yeah.
It was a cool car. Bought it from a dentist in town that had it here in Apple Valley, yeah. And I had the original bill of sale. He traded in a 64 Grand Prix when he bought it. So it was a cool car. It's one of those cars that... Yeah, I wound up selling it, and I bought a Mazda. Let's edit that out.
We've all got, you know, mistakes in our past.
Sure. Well,
you know, if you bought an old Buick from a dentist, you'd really imagine it'd be an early 50s, you know, with real teeth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That thing had the coolest speedometer. The speedometer was a ball that rolled. Instead of a needle in a big long gauge, it was a ball that rolled. So when you did a gnarly burnout in it, it would look like a ball that was just spinning in midair. It was pretty cool.
That's very cool. So like a vertical? It moved vertically?
It was a ball that was like directly in front of you in the center of the dash, and it had serrations on it from left to right with your mile per hour numbers on it. And it would just slightly roll as it sped up, you know, of course, or slowed down. The ball would either roll in a forward direction or an aft direction. So pretty cool.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was neat. Cool. Yeah. You know, GM had just some bitching stuff back in the day. I just think their design departments back in the 60s were just so far ahead of everybody else.
And tasteful.
What was it? Pontiac that had the Pontiac and Olds that had that really cool. The Speedo was actually mounted down inside the dash, and you never saw the Speedo itself. You looked at its reflection in a mirror.
What year was that? Like early 60s?
Early 60s?
Yeah. I know that Chrysler had that too. They had that really crazy-looking jukebox dash that they had for a while.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, but I think you're right. I think it may have been Oldsmobile, I'm guessing. Pontiac was kind of real similar to the way GM or Chevrolet, kind of along the same lines, but a little bit more ornate. But Oldsmobile had some pretty cool stuff back then that was pretty unique. It may have been an Oldsmobile.
Now, hey, Susie, you're a Camaro person, obviously. Alex has a really cool Camaro in his backyard. But it's like really, really cool. So you got to tell her about the.
Well, I just sold my 69 Camaro. I was in the Air Force, got orders out to California, came out here. I was looking for another 69 Camaro, and I looked through, what was it that we, the Auto Trader back in the day. Mm-hmm. And I was looking through that and the Recycler and trying to find one. And I couldn't find one that was within the price range that I wanted. And I had a roommate at the time that was into second gen Camaros. And he says, you know, I'm about ready to go look at a 70 SS396 Camaro, but I've got this 71 Rally Sport. Would you be interested in it? I said, well, I'll drive it. And I drove it around for a little bit. Yes. And I actually liked the way it handled better than my 69. So I said, well, I'll buy it. And I bought it. Well, the first thing I do whenever I buy a vehicle, I start a file on it and I write
VIN number, and I get all the numbers that I can off of it. That way I've got some sort of a record. If something happens to it, I can tell the cop, hey, here's the VIN number and everything else. Well, I start copying the VIN number down. It's 12487L500003. It's the third car made in 1971. It could possibly be the first rally sport made in 71. It's built in the first day of production in third week of August in 1970 in Van Nuys. So, but it's that typical early 70s Camaro color. It's that butterscotch yellow color with like a what they called a sandalwood interior, which is like a in between tan and white. It's not a real desirable color combination, but it's kind of cool in its own right. But the car is numbers matching from top to bottom. I mean, carburetor, distributor, and even in the amount of time that I've owned the car, I found date-coded water pump and a bunch of other date-coded pieces that run right in with where this one's at. It's just waiting to get restored. It's just one of those projects that's been, you know, I've been doing other hot rod stuff, and eventually I'll get to it. But,
I was going to say, when he was saying you had it in your backyard, that you're going to fix it up one day, right?
No, it's actually covered up, and it's on
concrete. It's not actually sitting
it's stored nicely, but yeah, it needs to get a full restoration. And this will get one that'll get all the way down to, you know, torque paint colors and, you know, factory overspray. It'll try to get as factory as I can get it. And
that's awesome.
I think it'd be a fun restoration project. So
yeah, as fun as a restoration project can be.
Well, you know, the one thing about restoration projects that are different than hot rod projects is that for the most part, if you're buying good quality parts for your restoration, everything fits. You buy you build a hot rod and you change one little thing and you realize that everything that touches that part is now got to get modified.
That's true. That's true.
Everything that's even remotely close to it's got to get changed because you decided to go with a Allen head bolt instead of a hex head bolt. And next thing you know, $300 later, you're...
$300 later, still nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. You realize, there's a piece of steel braid on the engine. Well, you either take that piece of steel braid off or you put everything steel braid on it. There is no middle ground. You've got to do it. One or the other. Get either run it or take it off.
Yeah, That's true. But those split bumpers, man, those are hot ticket items.
Yeah. You know, there was a period of time when they were kind of, they weren't. But now, since the first gen cars like you guys got, those things are just way out of sight. But the split bumpers are hanging in there pretty well. The 70 to 73s are like the next one to really start bringing money. And even the rubber bumpered Camaros in the late 70s are starting to bring money now.
Well, you know what's crazy is the third gens.
Yeah. Oh, really? They're bringing money.
All the big aftermarket like suspension guys are building third gens.
I just noticed that the Detroit Speed has built a big kit for a third gen. And I'm thinking those things were the step kids for a long time.
You couldn't give those away for years.
If you've ever owned one, you'll understand that. Yeah. My wife had one when we first dated. Yeah. When we first started dating, she had one. She had an 82 Trans Am. And it's the crazy story is that before she had that Trans Am, she had a 77 Trans Am. And her dad goes, you don't need that old car here. Just take my newer Trans Am. And they sold her 77. And he gave her this absolute, it was a great shape, but it was a 305. It made like 140 horsepower. We started dating. I changed the exhaust. I put a shift kit in the transmission. I sent the carburetor down to the carburetor shop, had Brad Urban redo it. Did a bunch of stuff to it. That thing still would not, it wouldn't scratch second gear if the pavement was icy. It was the biggest pile of crap ever. And you start working on the car and you better have your standard kit and your metric kit laying out there.
Yeah.
Because everything is in between. You'll be, you know, you got your hand buried in the thing. It's like freaking wrench won't fit. Yeah. It's not a half inch, dude. It's a 14.
It's a 10 5/8 millimeter. Yeah, that's what it is.
Oh, I hated that car. And that car was up underneath the hood. It had so much sharp metal on it that if you slipped off of anything you were working on, you were going to blow your hand open. It was guaranteed.
It was almost as though they were given up.
Yeah, exactly.
There was so much plastic on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so much, it just, I don't know, they phoned it in.
Yeah, well, that was a kind of a dark era for GM.
But you know what's crazy about it? I'm starting to see some ones that got that people are building. They're very nice cars. I mean, yeah. So much stuff.
I still want the Virgin convertible.
In my opinion, an 82 to, what is that, an 87, whatever that body style Camaro is, make the baddest looking pro streeters ever. That is a good looking car with a Nurburgring, in it, in my opinion. That is a bitching car. It just looks good.
And I mean, it's a really great platform to work on with aftermarket. Now, you know, to get it either to race or for pro touring.
So even the front strut setup works good for what you guys do? I mean, because those things, I think they're strut, aren't they? The fronts?
Oh, we don't keep any.
Okay. That's all gutted.
Just platform-wise, it's really easy to, you know, get bolt-on stuff.
Yeah, low center of gravity, pretty wide track. Yeah, it's got a lot of good aspects to it.
Yeah, you can put a lot of tire underneath it.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you know, you want a little more power, but...
Well, that 305 isn't going to work for you?
No, not just like that flathead 6 I pulled out of the Rambler.
The flathead 6 probably makes more horsepower.
I was going to say, I'd give a 305 a run.
So we haven't asked yet, though. Susie, what is your favorite car that you've had?
Oh, God. That's a tough one.
Say it's the Prius. Please say it's the Prius.
Yeah, I've never had a Prius. I did drive a Tesla, though, and that was pretty freaking amazing.
Yeah.
Gosh. I mean, I haven't had a lot of cars, but probably for a woman, I've had more than my share. I had a 78 Camaro in high school that I liked. I liked a lot. I had, I guess when you talk about classic cars, aside from the Rambler, of course, I had a 68 Thunderbird with the 429 Thunderjet and suicide doors.
Nice.
That is a party car if there ever was one.
Right. I had the deluxe back seat that curved.
Yes. Nice, with the side bolsters. That thing's so cool.
I ran around with it. One of my buddies growing up had one, and his was gold with a black interior. And they had the what they called that seat. Yeah, you didn't want to be on the edges near the doors because it felt like you were already sitting in the front seat.
Yeah, but
it had such a weird curve to it. It's such a strange thing, but it was bitching.
I could get, you know, six girlfriends back there. And with that 429, I remember being up, if you've ever been in Northern California in the 70s, they built a high-speed highway between San Francisco and San Jose. And it ran right along the hills between the peninsula and the coast. And big, wide open, like six lanes in each direction, big, wide lanes. And, you know, as high school kids, well, I happened to live off that highway. So I'd leave high school and go up the highway. And I remember pulling onto that highway off the connector and looked over. And, of course, I've got all my girls in the back and everyone's giggling and, you know, blonde hair flying out the windows. And he was in a Corvette. And of course he's staring us down. And I give him the nod, right? Because I apparently thought I was quite bitching back then. All like 95 pounds of me. And and he's looking at me and he kind of nods back and I just floored it. And I just left him in his Corvette, literally in the dust. Probably more carbon came out of that tailpipe than in exhaust, but you know, that I guess maybe your favorite car is based around some of the favorite memories that you get from it. Right. So that was a good memory, you know, being a high school girl driving a grandpa car that had a 429 Thunderjet in it. Of course, color, you know, that didn't mean anything to any of my girlfriends.
Yeah, what color was your Thunderbird?
Mine was sky blue with a black final.
Landau top of that crazy little S-shaped thing on the
I had those and I replaced the bulbs. They worked.
Oh,
my windows didn't always work though. The windows were a problem. Sometimes they went up and sometimes they went down.
Were those vacuum? No, they would have been electric.
No.
They were electric, yeah.
Ford had real crazy electronics or electrics in their doors. Really weird.
Really bad. Crazy
stuff. Yeah. A lot of limit switches, upper and lower limit switches and weird stuff. It's weird.
Yeah. The electrics in that were not very reliable.
But tell me, when's the last time you saw one of those cars on the road? I haven't seen
one on the road, but you know what's so funny is, and that's probably why it came to mind. Last night we were looking on Craigslist. I'm trying to figure out, we're going to sell our C10, and I was trying to kind of figure out some prices. And some guy is selling like 20 cars that an older gentleman has and is going to get rid of. And parked next to a C10 truck was a damn 68 Thunderbird four-door suicide doors.
Oh,
it's a sign.
I know. And I think it was actually, it was hard to tell, but I think it was light blue.
Mm.
Yeah, that chalky, light baby sky blue color.
Yep.
Now, did you fix up all everything you ever had? Did you ever mess with stuff or did you just leave it stock? What was your thing with your cars?
I did not fix up everything. No. Probably because it's only been the last maybe 10 years that I had more than one car. And you know, when you fix up a car, you always have to have a backup.
Yep.
Yep.
You're supposed to.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I mean, I tend to make changes. I'm no master mechanic by any stretch of the imagination. I'm teachable and I can do what I do, but probably, you know, Rodney and I have been together for almost 17 years and that's probably the most modifying that I've done.
Is there one mod that you do on every car that you get? I'm a wheel guy. I'll change wheels on everything I have. I will never run the stock wheels on anything. But
I would like to be. I would like to change the wheels on just about everything.
To me, it makes the biggest change and difference.
Yes,
I believe.
Yeah. But I have an '83 Porsche 944, and I've got old school gold BBS wheels on that one.
Oh yeah.
Oh right.
I love 944s, and they do. They don't look complete without BBS.
Mm-hmm. I kind of agree with you. The dial tones don't do it for me.
Nope.
That car is just that. That's actually, you want to talk about favorite cars? That's way up there. That car is just so fun.
Is that one getting an LS swap too?
Yeah, it is eventually.
Nice.
Yeah.
I so badly want to get my hands on a 928 and do an LS swap. God, I wanted one of those cars since I was a kid.
And but you know, that 928, that's a nice motor.
Well, that's a V8, isn't it?
That's
a V8 was a V8 car.
Yeah.
See, I always thought they were just too round. I was always a big fan of the 944, but the 928 was just too bubbly.
Is to find like a 928 like around like 91, 92 and
The S4, the last versions they did were the best ones. Yep.
Yeah, they definitely were because that went into the 968 after that. And it had better looks for sure. Yep. It wasn't so, I don't know. It had a weird catfish in the front and then it was so round in the back. but that 928, that motor is really nice. But you know what the hard thing to do with that 928 is to get one that's a manual transmission.
I'd say either that or one that anything electric works in anymore, period.
Yeah, depending on the...
They're garbage wiring wise.
Didn't they hire Lucas for it?
Yeah. I think they called in like a couple French guys to work on those. They're like, oh, you guys can engineer this crap.
So, Susie, quick question for you. Where did you learn to drive? I mean, not just drive, but to autocross drive. Did your husband teach you?
Yeah, for the most part. He taught me some of the basics. As I'm sure you can imagine, having your significant other tell you how to drive.
I don't know what that's like. Wait.
No.
It can be tense. You know, I'm not going to lie. And he wants me to be something that I clearly wasn't right out of the gate. So we took we actually, I think the first time I autocrossed, I drove the Camaro. The second time I drove the Porsche. My Porsche doesn't have power steering. Mm-hmm. So, I realized really quickly that unless I wanted to break my arm, I probably shouldn't race that car until I swapped in some power steering and a decent sway bar. But, when I took the Porsche, my dear friend, Mary Posey, and I don't know if you know who Mary Posey is, but
I know who she is.
Yeah, she's a multi-time SCCA national champion. She actually, 2 years ago beat Al Unser for the national championship.
No kidding. I didn't know that.
She's badass.
I know she's one hell of a driver, but that's cool.
Yeah. Her and David, her husband, Dave, they've got a bitchin' red Camaro that is just a killer. It is an absolute killer.
That's actually 100% Mary's car, her second time. Yeah. Yeah. Dave's got a 67, I think, but it hasn't seen the light of day. What Dave races is a Lola.
Yeah. He's got a T70.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's pretty amazing. He'll race that in Monterey. They live in Monterey in the historics. And that is really fun to see. And that's beautiful.
Eight. That's indeed a bucket list race for me. I want to go up there and watch the Can-Am cars run.
Oh, so fun. So fun, because you get to see like the Smokey Yunick cars and the Sunoco cars.
Right.
It's crazy, right. Crazy fun.
Yeah.
Really, really fun. The whole week is really fun. That's the only time I've ever been at a car event. I went down by myself because Rodney had to work, and I drove the Camaro down. I was meeting up with Mary and a couple of other people. Coincidentally, we were all women. And I pulled into Laguna Seca, actually just to turn around because I missed my turn. And I pulled into Laguna Seca, and there was a McLaren pulling out, and we both almost wrecked staring at each other. Each other's car. Where on earth do you have somebody driving a McLaren and they're staring down a beat up 68 Camaro? And it's not beat up, but it's definitely a 50 footer. And that's how
it's feeling.
Cool it is. It's just these people that are such car enthusiasts, you know.
Yeah.
That's a neat trip. If you ever want to take a trip to Monterey and, you know, work in a car event, that's a good one. A really good one. That's a lot of
fun. I've actually worked on some cars that race for a guy that he's like one of the heavy hitters in that whole thing.
Oh yeah. And,
yeah. A guy named Tom Malloy. And,
Dave Posey probably knows him. I don't know enough people down there.
Oh, he's got a T70. He's got a McLaren. He runs up there. Yeah. He's got a
GT40.
He's got a GT40.
Original GT40.
He's got a Cobra. He's got, I don't know.
Wait, who'd you say?
Tom Malloy.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say, because Bruce Camburn, I don't know if he runs at Historics, but he's got an original Cobra and he's got an original GT.
This guy has a bunch of original Indy cars that won Indy. I got to do some graphics. I got to relay out the whole paint scheme on one that was the car that, what is his name?
Ammo.
Yeah, Emo drove and finished second in the 86 Indy 500.
Wow.
And it's getting restored, so I got to do it and make it all look like it did back in the day, which is kind of cool.
You, baller.
You're the man to do it, too.
Yeah. That's awesome.
I'm waiting for you to finish up the Summer's Eve car. That's my favorite one.
Yeah.
Car was awesome.
What a douche.
Wait, who just said you're such a douche?
welcome to our family.
That's awesome.
Oh my god.
Set him up, you knock him down. It's going great.
So yeah, so that's so Mary was my first real like professional trainer. And then
what a great trainer.
I know. I feel very lucky that we're friends. We are actually truly friends, but that's because we lived, you know, an hour and a half apart. And then I went to Evo school, Evolution Driving School.
Nice.
And it was actually the Evo Driving School that I went to the weekend before, and then the next weekend we went down to Southern California to run one of Bill Howell's events when he was doing Run to the Coast. And that's when I got in the car with the BFG tires and said that I would swore that I would never buy a BFG tire. And I bitched out the guy who was there from BFG. But, you know, how quickly we eat crow, because now I won't run anything else. I was talking to Brian about this earlier, that I've got this kind of Me Too story that I'm kind of trying to work out in my head, because motorsports is kind of a great equalizer. And yes, have I been doubted as a woman and, you know, questioned as to if I knew what I was talking about. And you know, they always like to test you.
Yeah.
And which I'm sure you all can imagine after talking to me at SEMA how well that goes. Motorsports is a bit of a great equalizer, because women are they're very focused. We tend to be able to focus really, really well, and we tend to not drive with only the accelerator. And it's empowering. Mm-hmm. It's really empowering. So it's scary at first, because you don't want to look like a fool. But when you realize that there's no way you can look as foolish as somebody else, and there's never a woman in last place at the autocross. There's never a woman in last
That's
place.
That's true.
Always a man.
Well, I got an important question though with this autocross thing. Is it harder to put your makeup on in the autocross track than it is on the freeway?
Yeah.
It just sunk.
What's that about leashes?
No.
Yeah.
Nice, Susie.
Yeah.
Here's the funny part. If you want to bookend this whole thing, it was Dorothy Levitt. English woman who set all kinds of like time and distance records, who essentially invented the rearview mirror.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and not as a joke or anything. She carried like a little like a vanity mirror with her, and what she'd do is when she was on like, you know, one of those distance courses, she'd use it to see what was behind her, because none of those cars had rearview mirrors.
And she could put on her mascara.
And, well, yeah, the following year she lost her left eye in a mascara incident, but that's.
Damn it.
Went by the name Patch Levitt after that point.
After the second accident, she named herself after her cat Patches. So,
well, you know, back to this whole women and racing thing, I hate Danica Patrick. I don't even know her,
it's
so
universal.
I don't really hate her. But. Well, right. But you know why? You know what bugs me about that is that, did she get so much attention because she's a woman? Absolutely. And on top of it, she's an attractive woman. Mm-hmm. But you know what? She's still qualified.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't win, but she's still qualified week after week.
Yeah.
And how many of us don't even get invited to that party, let alone qualify?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't even ever recall ever seeing her not making the cut. I think she was always in the field. That's true.
Yeah. And so it kind of pissed me off, because yes, she got a lot of attention because she was a woman, an attractive woman. And that's probably why she got a lot of sponsorship too. But the bottom line is, she also made the dang cut.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's kind of not fair, right? It's like we're put... as women in racing, we are sort of put to a higher standard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially when you're the only one out of 43 in the field, you bet. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Well,
right.
She had a target.
Yeah. The spotlight is always on
one.
You. Always on.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, and I love it when I'm out on the autocross, which, you know, a lot of people don't consider racing, but I beg to differ.
Oh yes.
It is racing.
Know,
what?
Oh, well, lots of people. Oh, you do that thing where you drive around cones? Uh-huh. Yeah. At full throttle.
Yeah.
But I love it when Rodney will come back and he'll say, oh my gosh, you should have heard what people were saying about you in the pits. He just came in the room and brought me some Girl Scout cookies.
Right on.
Oh boy.
What a guy.
I know. He probably wonders what I'm doing because I forgot to tell him. but he'll say, oh my gosh, there was, you know, see that guy over there? He and his buddy, about choked when they kept going on. Wait, what do you mean that's a woman? Now, mind you, at Good Guys, there's, especially at Pleasanton, we could have sometimes 10, 12 women running.
Yeah.
For a while there. He's like, yeah, he nearly choked when he turned around and told him, yeah, that's my woman.
That's awesome.
Yeah. They stopped talking pretty quick.
You know, it's funny. I've noticed women who race and women who are in shooting sports often much outperform their male counterparts. And I think it's a more gentle touch. I think it's more focused, like you said, and, you know, it's more calculating. And, I love watching when women go into like a shooting competition or a race competition and they just clean up. And, you know, there's always those guys who are like, oh, you know, all pissed off about it. I think it's awesome to watch. And I love seeing big mouth guys getting shut down on that stuff.
Yeah.
It's my favorite.
Like I said, it is empowering for sure. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I love getting men in the passenger seat. Who, you know, you can tell, you chat them up and you can tell they're thinking, oh, yeah, whatever. And then you take them for a ride and they're like, well, crap. That was really cool. You know?
Yeah.
And
you drive like a girl. Yeah. You want a lesson?
Yeah. That's what I tell people. I said, you know, now do you want to drive like a girl? What do you think about women drivers now?
I love it.
My wife has a t-shirt that says, yeah, I shoot like a girl. You want a lesson? Uh-huh. Love it. And she's a hell of a lot better shot than I am.
There's a concentration to level two. I think that women, we can shut things out and concentrate. I think, I say that, but.
Any woman who's had really kids, yes.
Yeah. When I turn 50, my concentration is a lot worse, but. But yeah, in general, I would say it's on autocross specifically, a lot of it has to do with our problem solving skills that consistently as a woman who's, you know, managing a family or a household or whatever, you're consistently trying to think through the next step.
Right.
And, for sure. And, you know, so if that happens, okay, well, I got to be prepared for this or that or this. And that's kind of how I treat the autocross.
Yeah.
It's a gate-to-gate problem solving.
That's
if I go into that turn that way, where's the car going to be for the next turn? You know, you're a couple of gates ahead with your eyesight and trying to figure out, okay, where do I got to be to get to where I need to be? So now, is SEMA the only time that you guys all get in the same place?
Funny you should ask.
We try to do a sleepover once every couple weeks at Eric's place. Last time, what did we do? We did romantic comedies and
We lighted Naked Twister.
We lighted farts.
Yeah, yeah. Nice. Yeah, I hated the one glass of water thing. That really sucked.
Yeah. Well, it happens.
Yeah, but it was really funny.
TP the neighbors.
Doorbell ditch.
Yeah. The makeovers were fun.
Did you sneak out the bedroom window after midnight?
Of course. Actually, we're old. We just walked out the front door, man. That's too much work.
Oh my god.
Sleepover. Everybody's in bed by 7:30.
Then everybody's up at 9 to pee and 12 to pee.
You don't have to sleep at all because nobody wants to work on somebody else's car.
There you go.
So to it, I would love to have you come back if you would. I think, Susie, it would be, I think I speak for everybody here. We'd love to have you back.
Sure.
That was convincing. Sure.
No, I mean, sure. Like often. Like a great idea, sure. Not like, yeah, sure. No, I meant it the good way.
Okay, sure. I love hanging out with you guys. You guys are a riot.
See, so you being brave.
I do have to say, before we wrap up, if that's okay, if you haven't had a chance to go and on the website round6pod.com and read Susie's blog entry that she did for us. You need to.
I loved it. It was fantastic.
It was fantastic. Absolutely.
It was great. You have a great writing style.
Oh, thank you. I try to tell it like it is.
It's a great perspective that you write from. It's a fun read. It really is.
Oh, good. I want to tell it like it is, which is, you know, cars and motorsports are really cool and empowering for women. And there's a lot of organizations that are trying to help women cross that barrier.
Nice. Yeah, that's great.
And true. I want to encourage people, women, to come and take rides with me.
I want to go for a ride with you.
You gotta wear a skirt, though.
It's a kilt, damn it.
Well,
whatever.
You don't have to ask me to wear a skirt. I will wear a skirt.
You get the legs for it. Why not?
Yeah.
If you guys
not that I noticed or anything.
Oh, thank you. I think you did. I appreciate it. It makes a guy feel good.
Breezy.
Makes me feel something.
Breezy.
Not good.
It's not good.
Oh my god, that's so awesome.
Yeah, we gotta bail on this thing.
Let's do a cool wrap up so we sound professional when I edit all that junk out.
Yeah, we get it down to about 30 minutes.
Alrighty, so let's go with how should we do this? Hey, well, yeah, that's gonna go well.
Well, hey,
was nice you here. Good time.
We were just talking about big Hawaiian people. Now we're going to exit.
Great.
We're still trying to figure out what kind of the good kind
Alex
of
Alex is
going to
go lick some wax paper.
Oh, shit.
It's a huge surfboard, really. It's a surfboard with pontoons off the side. It's pretty good. Oh, shit.
Oh, man.
Okay. Wait, what's that segment you guys are talking about? Like Hawaiian people. Oh, we call that whole part. Everybody gets laid. It's awesome.
Yeah.
I got nothing. I don't know how the hell to wrap this up now. Thanks.
Yeah. Yes. Okay, living actually.
We're alive.
That's the title of the episode. Done.
The hills are alive. That's perfect.
Episode 5. The hills are alive. Outstanding. Okay. So let's.
Somebody's gonna ask Susie, "What does that mean?" And she's just gonna start laughing. And it's like, what?
I don't know, but they were big and they were red.
Oh, the hills have eyes. A single eye, but they have eyes.
The hill has eyes.
He was winking at you. Done. The hills are alive with the sound of it. I didn't know they made noise. Yeah, you're just not doing it right. So.
Holy shit.
Susie, on behalf of the group, I apologize.
our disclaimer.
Yeah, you had her sign the disclaimer.
Yeah, if you'd like to send back that.
I think it's okay.
A notarized release form, please. Hey, release. That's great. The jokes keep coming. Oh, and it's like the layer cake of dirtiness. layer cake of filth. That'll be our next episode. Okay, professional face. Here we go. All right. Well, thank you again. I know we kept you way over time, and I apologize for that. But thank you so much. Thanks for listening to the Round 6 podcast. At the end here, somehow I have retained physical mass and remain Brian.
I'm still Brad.
I believe I'm still Alex.
I used to be Eric.
And we'll catch y'all next time. Thanks again for listening, and be sure to keep up with us gearheads over on our website at www.round6pod.com. And if you'd like to, be sure to follow along with us over on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Subscribers to our e-newsletter have access to expanded content such as tutorials, uncut interviews, bloopers, and behind-the-scenes footage. It costs nothing to subscribe, and you can do so over on our website at www.round6pod.com. Ever so quietly going, the hills are alive with the sound of penis. And...